You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's oh! Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail line is at 331-979-1369. Drop us a voicemail, a text message, whatever it is. We've got two Bulls games in action this weekend, tonight and tomorrow night, so we'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369 is the place to do that. Matt, back here on Locked On Bulls. Happy Friday to you. We've got double dose of Bulls action this weekend. Are you excited at all for this Bulls matchup on the road, taking on the Pistons tonight and the Rockets tomorrow night? First of a three-game short mini road series for the Bulls. So, anticipation. Are you excited for these Bulls games this weekend? Or are you kind of just bleh?
Yeah, I mean, I am excited in the sense that we're going to get a rematch in, you know, against two teams tonight against Detroit and tomorrow against the Rockets that were losses that were very winnable games for the Bulls earlier this season. You know, of course, the Bulls-Pistons loss was, I think, just the second game of the season, which had that very confusing Fred Hoiberg option to leave Wendell off the floor and put Jabari in for a defense-only possession late in the game, in which we saw Ish Smith, their backup point guard, just immediately torch both Jabari and Bobby on an easy layup, and then LaVine lost the ball when he was trying to hit the go-ahead, the game winner after, in the possession after that. And the Rockets game, were it not for a just drastically pitiful third quarter, worst quarter the Bulls have played this season probably, when they only put up 7 points in a 12-minute quarter. Other than that, played the Rockets fairly evenly. This is not the Rockets team we saw from last year. They're going through their own struggles. I think it would be cool to see the Bulls manage to pull off a win against either of these teams, because they were close against both of these teams the first time around.
What's kind of strange is that if you look across the Pistons' numbers, across their shooting numbers, across any of their offensive numbers, they aren't very good. They're bottom third in the league in a lot of these rankings. You look at field goal percentage, they're 28th. You look at three-point attempts, they're 24th. You look at three-point percentage, they're 26th. You look at two-point percentage, they're bottom third. So all of these things adding up, and then you look at points per game, too, they're 30th. So I look at all of those rankings and say to myself, like, this could be a potential game where the Bulls could pull one out here. And it's all a matter of how they play on the road, and the Bulls are not very good on the road. Looking at Blake Griffin, though, looking at Andre Drummond, those two guys, and one of the biggest weaknesses this Bulls team has had this season is how to combat people at the rim. And I think we've seen that time and time again, not just with rebounds, but stopping guys from scoring at the rim too. So the Bulls are going to have their hands full with Blake Griffin tonight. 25.1 points per game, 9.6 rebounds per game, 5.1 assists. He's shooting 46.5% from the field and 36.7% from three. So if the Bulls want to hang around in this one, three-pointers, stopping Blake Griffin at the rim, and stopping DeAndre Jordan from just absolutely eating you alive on the boards is, I think, two of my main goals for tonight's game against the Pistons.
Yeah, I mean, the Bulls have been getting crushed on the boards all season long. Drummond leads the league in rebounds per game so far. And, you know, the Bulls have been going with a lot of small ball lineups recently just because of the lack of options that Fred has and the fact that he's got a bunch of guards and a lot of his front court pieces, or at least two of his main front court pieces in Bobby and Markkanen are still on the shelf. So that's why the Bulls have been getting crushed on the boards. And, you know, it'll certainly be a key. Another one for the Bulls tonight is trying to protect that three-point line. Another thing that they have struggled to do most of the season, the first time these teams met, the Pistons, I think, went like 18 for 40 from downtown. 18 for 40, 45%, including Blake Griffin. Five of his makes on a 33-point evening came from behind the three-point line, as we've seen Blake really develop that aspect of his game over the last year or two. So rebounding and defending the three-point line will be key if the Bulls want to stay in this one.
Yeah, and talking about the Pistons defensively, you look at their league rank across opponents' percentages as far as three-pointers, field goal percentage, points per game, and even rebounds. The Pistons across the board are in the top five in most of these categories. Three-pointers made, three-pointers attempts. The Pistons are the best as far as stopping their opponents from taking those shots and making it. They're number one and only giving up 9.4 three-point makes per game on 29 attempts. So teams are shooting 32.3% from three against the Pistons. That ranks third in the league for the Pistons. So they've done a good job around the perimeter. They've done a good job around the rim. They're second in opponents' rebounds, which is good for them because they've got two monsters in Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, who can just absolutely eat you live on the board. So I think tonight is going to be a difficult test for the Bulls as far as how do you stop second chance points, which has been a problem over the last five games or so, is how to stop second chance points and how to make sure that you're taking productive shots. Because this Pistons team and what their stats are saying, just from the eye test, they're not giving up a whole lot of easy buckets, and similar to what we saw at the beginning of the season, I think this team is a little bit more developed, and maybe the Bulls can hang around in this one, but I don't know. Stopping Blake Griffin is a huge task for this Bulls team tonight. And then I don't know how many rebounds do you think Andre Drummond's getting tonight? At least 20?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he pulls down 20. I think the other factor here, and you know, Wendell Carter Jr. in his second real NBA game, the first time around when these teams met, played just 18 minutes, managed to avoid foul trouble, but was still like, he was a starter, but was still trying to earn that trust from Fred. Robin Lopez played 25 minutes off the bench in that first Bulls Pistons game. I wouldn't be surprised if something similar happens tonight, but it's, you know, we've seen Wendell really struggle with foul trouble recently. And trying to do his best to protect the paint, protect the rim, and battle Andre Drummond for those boards. It's going to be tough sledding again for Wendell tonight. And the other factor is that Robin Lopez had probably his most efficient productive offensive game of the season in their loss to Milwaukee the other night. He had a season high 17 points. I think we're going to see another night when Wendell, unfortunately, will get in foul trouble early, and Fred's going to have to turn to Robin Lopez to play some real heavy minutes off the bench. And it'd be nice if we can get that kind of offensive production from Rolo, but it's not something you expect on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. You said Wendell Carter Jr., and I wonder what his mentality is. You know, just over the last five games, even looking at, you go all the way back to the Suns game where he was getting these ticky-tack fouls called on him. And it seems like it's been now a common theme over the last five games or so, is just early fouls too, man. I think Wendell Carter Jr., and I might be mistaken on this, but the first two or three minutes of the game, Wendell Carter Jr. is 100% without a doubt for sure going to pick up a foul. And that frustrates me, man. Like, picking up a foul in the first 2 minutes of the game might be the most frustrating thing, especially for a guy that gets in early foul trouble. So eliminate those early minute fouls, please. Please, Wendell Carter Jr. That's all I'm asking for you tonight, is stay out of foul trouble and don't pick up early stupid fouls when you don't need to. And he did that. He did that against the Bucks too. I think it was a minute and a half into the game and the Bucks were already at the free throw line and he already picked up a foul. So you can tell it's bugging him too. He's super frustrated by it too. You know, when he got pulled out of the game against the Bucks late and when he fouled out, he was pissed. You could see it on his face. He was like, this is not how things are supposed to go. So how do you combat that as a big man? I'm trying to think of the ways of like how he's still supposed to be aggressive the way he is on defense, but at the same time be cautious enough to know, hey, I can't pick up another foul here. I'll be out for the first half. I can't pick up another late foul, maybe in the early fourth quarter, because I will be sitting majority of those minutes. How do you combat that? And is it a thing where you've got to tell other guys, hey, man, like, we need some more responsibility on the defensive side of the ball. I can't be the only guy out here trying to be aggressive, because then I'm out of the game. So what does Wendell Carter Jr. do to try and stop being in foul trouble?
Well, the sad thing is, realistically, some of it's out of his control. Some of it is the fact that he's a rookie that does not have much, if any, respect from the NBA refs right now. He's getting some ticky-tack fouls called on him. Some of them are a rookie being a little too aggressive defensively. And that, of course, comes with the territory of being a 19-year-old kid playing in a man's league and being asked to guard some very versatile, strong bigs in this league. The Bulls, you know, first month and a half of the schedule, Wendell's had some really tough assignments, and he's got another one on deck tonight. So that's part of it. The other part is, I mean... this happened in their game Monday night and again on Wednesday night. You see Wendell kind of get screwed over in situations where on the offensive end, one of Wendell's teammates makes a bad pass or commits a dumb turnover, and Wendell is stuck trying to stop a guy from getting a fast break the other way. Like, he picked up two fouls like that on Wednesday night that I can immediately recall. And so some of this is not on Wendell. Some of it's just been bad luck. You want to see the kid make smart fouls when he needs to and avoid the fouls that he doesn't need to make. But I he's been hung out to dry a lot this season by his teammates being dumb on the offensive end, and that's not on Wendell.
Are you a hot sauce fan? Do you like hot sauce at all?
Love hot sauce.
How hot can you get with your hot sauce? Like, are you somebody who is all right with, like, if you're at home eating wings, like, sweating a little bit, getting a little bit of a red cheeks, you know, that type of feeling when you're eating? Or are you like, I like a little bit of bite, but that's about it?
I mean, I don't want to be, you know, firing napalm out the other end the next day, if you know what I mean. But I like definitely like hot wings and hot sauce that gives you, like, you know, the under eyeball sweat. I love that.
And so I bring this up because there's this YouTube show, and it's a podcast YouTube show where they bring on celebrities, NBA athletes across all major sports, musicians. It's called Hot Ones. And so they ask a list of like 10 or 12 questions. And Blake Griffin was actually their most recent guest. And so they go through a line of hot sauces from the, and they've got like this official pepper list of how hot they actually are graded. I guess there's like a grading system out there for hot sauces. I had no idea, but Blake Griffin was on there, and you try 1 through 10, and 10 is like the hottest sauce you could ever have. And so I've tried one of them. I think it goes all the way up to, so they go 1 through 8. I've tried number 7. It's called Da Bomb, and man, my mouth was on fire for probably about a half hour. And so I'm bringing this up because Blake Griffin's interview on there was really great. You guys should go check it out. The show is awesome too, and it's just funny to see the reactions of people who are like strong, masculine NBA athletes going up there and biting into a chicken wing, and all of a sudden, you know, they're sweating on stage. They're like chugging water and milk. It's hilarious. It's a phenomenal show. You should try it. And I think, you know, at some point this time, like, if we ever come up with a bet here, I think hot sauce might be our avenue.
Hey man, I'm all for it. like I said, I don't want to be miserable with the levels of hotness, but I'm always down to try some once.
So check that out. Check out Hot Ones if you want to see Blake Griffin on it. And like I said, I think they're in their seventh season now. It's through Complex, and it is a phenomenal show. So go check that out. We'll be back here on Locked On Bulls in 60 seconds. Stay right with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up, 331-979-1369, our text and voicemail line there. Matt, before we get to some of the text message that we wanted to get to at the end of this show, we've had a couple guests on the show the last couple of days, so it's kind of deterred us from talking about one thing that might apply to this Bulls team that's happened this week. And Kyle Korver being traded to the Utah Jazz. In return, the Cleveland Cavaliers get 2 second-round picks and Alec Burks. So I immediately thought, and I think a lot of other Bulls fans did the same thing, is like, okay, if over-the-hill Kyle Korver is still commanding 2 second-round picks and an expiring player, like what does that mean for Justin Holliday's trade value? And so I put up a Twitter on our Locked On Bulls page on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, and said, so if Kyle Korver gets that, Justin Holliday's trade value should be either higher than Kyle Korver's, even with Kyle Korver's, or lower than Kyle Korver's. What do you think so far after seeing that deal?
I can't believe that people, and a non-trivial amount of people, voted that Holliday's trade value should be higher. I think those people are friggin' crazy.
Really?
Yes.
You think so? Even just for this season, like, take everything you know about Kyle Korver and throw that out the window. And just thinking about this season and adding him to a Utah Jazz team, like, maybe he'll be good with the Utah Jazz. I thought it was just kind of a panic button movement by them, and maybe it'll pay off for them. But look, like, Kyle Korver's only played about 15 minutes a night, and he isn't scoring that much. He is shooting a ridiculous 46% from three, but at the same time, like, he's not going to be a world beater or a guy that you're going to ask to play 20 or 30 minutes. And maybe that's not what the Utah Jazz need. But I'm surprised to hear you say that maybe the value for Justin Holliday shouldn't be higher than Kyle Korver's. Like,
what?
I don't understand that. Like, Justin Holliday is shooting crazy from three this year. He's actually shown to be an average defender. Like, at that point, he beats Kyle Korver in being able to play defense, being able to move, being able to do some of the other things that Korver can't do. Korver beats him in the three-point shooting, but I think that's
okay.
All he beats.
First of all, I think the Holiday being a good, if not slightly above average defender thing is totally whack. It's hilarious to watch these games with Kendall Gill before our post game and outsider stuff on a nightly basis. Kendall Gill goes in on Justin Holiday as, like, I don't understand how people say he's a good defender. He's not. Like, he's just not. So, like, I don't, like, yeah, Kyle Korver is not a great defender. Guess what? Neither is Justin Holliday. And you said it. You say, oh, Justin Holliday is shooting lights out from three. He is shooting 40.1%. That's pretty good. That's above the league average for sure. Kyle Korver shooting 46.3. There's the difference right there. One of these guys has good nights and bad nights shooting threes. One of them only has good nights shooting threes. There's a big difference between shooting 40% from three and 46% from three. To me, that's the big difference. And Holiday is averaging 12.7 points per game in 35, almost 36 minutes a night. Korver, 6.8 points in only 15.7 minutes. It's not like the value that Justin Holliday has as a starter playing heavy minutes on a weak undermanned team right now inflates all of his stats across the board. If I'm getting one guy to be purely a coming off the bench stroke threes scorer, I'm paying more for Kyle Korver, even being, what, 7 or 8 years older than Justin Holliday. I am giving out more for Kyle Korver than I am for Justin Holliday, plain and simple. I think Bulls fans who think Holliday's trade value is above Korver's are nuts.
I would completely disagree with you. And the fact that you said Justin Holliday is a terrible defensive player is just frankly not true. Like, I like Kendall Gill a lot. I think his analysis is fantastic. But, man, that's just kind of an assumption. Like, yeah, the eye test tells you that maybe sometimes Justin Holliday gets beats. But let me tell you, defensive box plus minus, Justin Holliday is a positive defensive box plus minus player this year. While it's only 0.7. It's still positive. He's one of the only players in this Bulls team that has a positive defensive box plus minus. And, you know, I had other fans, too, on Twitter coming at me yesterday saying, you know, he got torched by Klay Thompson. Who do you think gave up those? No. Justin Holiday didn't guard Klay Thompson for that entire game. If you go back and watch that game, it was Cameron Payne and Hutchinson who were getting absolutely torched by Klay Thompson. And so was everybody else on the floor. So take outside that game. Justin Holiday right now is a better defender than Kyle Korver is. Let's be honest about that. 37-year-old Kyle Korver, you're going to ask him to play defense in the playoffs? Come on.
I'm not debating that, Jordan. I told you that Kyle Korver is a worse defender than Justin Holiday. I'm saying neither of them are very good, but what you're paying for in a trade is not the defensive value. It is being a three-point threat off the bench, a role player with a very specifically defined role on a playoff-caliber team. That's what Utah paid for. That's what the Sixers might pay for, because the Sixers were another team interested in Korver that didn't get him. People keep talking about Holiday going to the Sixers in a trade. That's what the Sixers would be paying for, a three-point threat on a playoff-caliber team with a very specifically defined role. Kyle Korver is better at that than Justin Holiday, plain and simple.
I can't wait to watch Kyle Korver play there, because I just don't think he's going to be any good. I realistically just don't think he's going to be any good. I think he's at the end of the road. You know, 15.7 minutes per game, 6.8 points, 1.8 rebounds, 1.1 assists, and basically no steals.
No, you just listed stats that I am telling you don't mean anything, Jordan.
They shouldn't.
Nobody's giving up trade value for Kyle Korver to get his rebounding or to get his assists. That's ridiculous. Why are you even bringing those up? It's about a three-point reliable shooter coming off your bench, a specifically defined role to fill a needed role on a playoff-bound team. That is why they gave up 2 second-round picks for Kyle Korver. And Justin Holiday, I'm sorry, not as much of a three-point threat as Kyle Korver. Facts. Look at their shooting percentages. Look at their career shooting percentages. Korver might be older, yes. But as a half-a-season loner, dude is more valuable in that role than Justin Holiday, plain and simple.
Maybe for the Utah Jazz, but I don't think that's the case for every playoff team looking to add another wing. Like, that's just my case. And it goes back to what the value of Justin Holiday is, not necessarily what the value of Korver is to the Utah Jazz. Because maybe Korver, they made that deal for Korver and it was a bit of a panic move. But at the same time, maybe that's all they were looking for, is three-point shooting off the bench. If you're talking about encapsulating the entire game and the entire value of Justin Holiday, man, you can't sit here and tell me that rebounds and assists and his shooting percentage doesn't matter and his defense doesn't matter to other teams. Maybe it doesn't matter to the Utah Jazz, which is fine. That's why they went and traded for Korver. But it's going to matter when you're going out to, I don't know, half a dozen teams and saying, hey, man, look, we've got a guy that can knock down three-point shots at a 40% clip or higher. We also have a guy who can rebound at times and can dish out assists and can get steals. Like, he's more of an overall player than Kyle Korver is to a playoff team, and that's where I'm sitting right now. So even if the value is, as far as what you could potentially get for Holiday, even if the value is just slightly higher?
No, it's not. I'm telling you, it's not.
So you don't think you can't get 2 second-round picks?
No.
You can't get at least 2 second-round picks for Justin
Absolutely
Holiday?
Not. No, they might get one. Two? No way. I'm not trying to hate on Justin Holiday, man. He's having a great season. He's probably having one of the better seasons of his career, especially with that three-point percentage. But no. Another factor here is that this Bulls front office not great at the negotiating table. Not great.
I mean, that has nothing to do with Justin Holiday, though.
I'm just talking. It does have something to do with you saying whether or not the Bulls can get 2 second-round picks for Justin Holiday. It has a lot to do with that. And that's why, another reason why, my answer is no. The Bulls are not getting 2 second-round picks for Justin Holiday. Not going to happen.
Then what are you getting for him?
Maybe one.
Maybe one? That's ridiculous. Kyle Korver went for 2 second-round picks in a player. A 37-year-old that has 1.8 rebounds, 1.1 assists.
Stop naming stats that don't matter, Jordan. I already told you that.
They don't matter to the Utah Jazz or to Kyle Korver, but if you add him to the 76ers team and he comes off the bench, if you add Justin Holiday to that team, you can't sit here and tell me that Justin Holiday's 4.6 rebounds per game, 2.5 assists, and 1.6 steals per game don't matter. Like, if they need a wing to come off the bench and play 20 minutes a night, you're sure as hell going to matter. that sure as hell is going to matter. The Utah Jazz are probably going to only use Korver in what, such as a 10 to 10, maybe 12 minutes a night to just literally sit in the corner and shoot threes? Fine. But other teams around the league are going to look for a guy that can actually play decent rotation minutes. And I don't know who those teams are right now,
Jordan,
at this point.
Jordan, please, like, look at the bigger context here. Justin Holiday's playing massive minutes on a very bad team and looks like a pretty good player because comparatively with the other pieces the Bulls have right now, he's better. That's not saying much. You put Holiday on that Sixers team, and he is nowhere near as efficient and productive as he's been for these Bulls just because the Bulls have nowhere else to go. That is plain and simple a fact. He is not going to be the same Justin Holiday for the Sixers that he is for the Bulls right now. No way, no chance.
So surrounding him with better players would in turn make Justin Holiday worse?
It would make him less valuable because they would not need him to do as much.
I don't know about that.
You don't know that the Sixers collectively have a much better, deeper, more effective, more dominant rotation of NBA players than the scrap heap the Bulls have been playing with for the first month and a half of the season? You don't know about that?
That's not what we're talking about. That's apples and oranges here, man. And I don't know about talking about depth as far as the 76ers.
We're talking about Justin Holiday's trade value. We're talking about Justin Holiday's trade value.
I'm not even saying the 76ers have to be the only place Justin Holiday goes.
You're talking about Justin Holiday coming to that Sixers team and being like a huge difference maker.
No. I'm talking about, yes, the value that he's gained with this Bulls team is because of the exposure and the minutes he's playing. I give you that. That's totally, totally right. But to say that Justin Holiday is all of a sudden going to turn worse when he goes and plays with better players, maybe in a smaller role, like, that to me just doesn't make any, that doesn't add up.
I'm not saying worse. I'm not saying his play is going to decline. I'm saying his impact on that team will be nowhere near the impact on this current
Absolutely.
Bulls team.
I'm not arguing that.
Holiday's not playing 35 right. minutes for the Sixers,
no,
okay?
No, I totally get that, and I totally agree with you there.
So because of that, the Sixers do not see his trade value as high as what you think it is, maybe what you want it to be. They're not going to pay through the teeth for a guy that they're going to use as a bench guy coming off the bench shooting threes.
You know, and I can hear you. I hear all of your reasons why you don't think Justin Holiday is worthy of more than what Kyle Korver got. And maybe you're right. Maybe if you do factor in the Bulls front office and their ability to negotiate deals, and you factor in that Holiday's been playing a ridiculous amount of minutes. Okay, I get that. I just, at surface level, it makes sense for Kyle Korver. And yes, he's a great three-point shooter, and he's been doing that again this year. And maybe it's the fact that the Bulls are just garbage and nobody's actually watching Holiday play. That could be another factor, too. So at least I'm saying, if there's anything right now, this very, very second, Justin Holiday's trade value should at least be even with what the Cleveland Cavaliers got in return for Kyle Korver. It should be at least even with it. It makes no sense if it doesn't. If you get only 1 second round pick for Justin Holiday and the Utah Jazz gave up a player and 2 second round picks for an expiring contract, like, you look like the biggest dumbasses in the world. That's all I'm going to say.
No argument there. I'm just telling you the reality of what we know about the Bulls and their ability to execute trades and what the league's perception of value is for a guy like Kyle Korver versus the league's perception of value for a guy like Justin Holiday. Just a couple years ago, Kyle Korver signed a 3-year, $22 million deal with the Cavs at age whatever he was then, 36, 35.
34.
Justin Holiday signed a 2-year deal with a similar $7 million annual contract at a much younger age. That right there tells you how much the league thinks that those two players are worth, even though one is significantly older than the other. That's all I'm really talking about here, Jordan. I'm not trying to insult Justin Holiday. I'm trying to explain to you what the league thinks Kyle Korver is worth and what the league thinks Justin Holiday is worth. One is higher than the other. Korver is higher than Holiday. That's just how I see it. Like, the only thing that I could say gives Holiday an edge and maybe gets them close to being worth something like 2 second round picks, which I still think the Bulls won't get for him, is the fact that Korver still has another year on that deal and is owed $7.5 million next season, whereas Holiday is coming into free agency and his contract will come off the books. That is even just as much as his 40% hits from 3-point range is a valuable piece of Justin Holiday as a trade piece.
That, but that is the only thing that I think gets Holiday close to being worth what Kyle Korver is worth.
Interesting. We'll have to find out more as the weeks progress going up to the trade deadline. But I know this is a hot topic, and Matt, there's probably people that feel the same way as you do right now about Justin Holiday's value. And there's probably some Bulls fans out there, and there actually is, because we've got proof in the poll that we put up that 74% either said that Holiday's trade value should be even with or higher, and only 26% said lower. So we'll have to find out.
Well, that 74% is going to be largely disappointed. If and when we actually trade Holiday, they will be very disappointed in the return we get back.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is if. That's a huge if. You know how the Bulls love holding on to their players. So,
well, you know, they probably value Justin Holiday as a part of their core.
Just like Paul Zipser.
Zipser, who we're high on.
Precisely. And Pau Gasol. Because, you know, we couldn't, of course, trade him and get some value for him instead of just letting him walk away for nothing in a season that was totally meaningless.
Let's get to some mailbag questions. You can do that at 331-979-1369. Drop us a voicemail or text message, either one. We will sure to get you on the show, so make sure you drop all those questions there at 331-979-1369. All right, Matt, let's kind of go through this rapid fire here and see if we can answer as many questions as we can in the last 10 minutes of the show. First one here from the 678 says, how would you guys feel about the Bulls trading for Markel Fultz? Matt, we talked about this shortly a couple different times over the last 2 weeks. Man, I think I'm fully out of Markel Fultz. I think I'm at that point where I'm fully out on him.
Hard pass. Hard pass. Look, I feel bad for the kid and the way that his NBA career has started in Philly for being a number one pick. Clearly he's got not only physical issues but some mental issues. You know, he's dealing with a shoulder, he's dealing with a jacked up shooting form, he's got some kind of yips going on. I hope he finds a new fresh start. I think he needs a fresh start because the Sixers fan base is already all over him, and they just see him as nothing more than a joke at this point. And they see him as a guy who's expendable that they don't need because they have Embiid and they have Simmons and now they have Jimmy Butler and they've got all these great pieces and clearly a playoff bound team. They don't need Markel Fultz. He needs a fresh start, but I'm sorry, I'm not going anywhere near that. This Bulls team is already fighting an uphill battle to being relevant again and hoping that you're getting development from all these young pieces. I don't want to add the headache of Markel Fultz and figuring out what the hell's going on with his shoulder and up in his noggin to that list of things that we're already worried about with this young core.
Yeah, and another thing is I don't think this is exactly the place that you go to try and help a guy medically, especially if you look at the past injuries the Bulls have had over the last 3 years. You can just look at it. I don't think this is the best place. And I was listening to the Ryan Russillo podcast yesterday, and he had Adrian Wojnarowski on, and they talked about this real quick, and they said, I think the best place for him to go is to a place where the team is willing to just completely shut him down for the rest of the year and figure out whatever the hell is going on with his shot, whatever's going on mentally. Figure that out, just shut him down for the entire year. And if he's ready back maybe in February or March when you can kind of figure something out, then that's when you bring him back. But you don't bring him back until that point, till everything is figured out. So maybe they said maybe Orlando would be in play for him. Maybe Phoenix would be in play for him. So we'll see. It'll be an interesting thing to move, but I just don't see taking the chance on him. Like, really, you want to bring in another project point guard? Like, that's the very last thing I want to do on this team. I want a point guard that's going to come in here and actually
Bulls
play.
Bulls love point guards who can't shoot, so yeah, let's throw him onto the pile. I think we're done there. All right, let's move on to this one from Josh, who says, I know we aren't all super high on Jabari, but in the event the Bulls can't sign anyone good next year, would you be willing to extend Parker to the second year of his contract? Not sure what the cutoff date is to pick up the option, but would be nice to have a scorer like him in the event we fail to sign anyone of value, as always. Especially if he continues to slowly improve as he has over the last few game, over the last few games. What are your thoughts? Thanks for checking in, Josh. Jordan, what do you think about that?
So I think the cutoff date to pick up his option is like in May or June, right? After mm-hmm. the NBA Finals is over. So yeah, they still got some time on that, but I already know what your answer is. And Matt, I am with you 110%. Absolutely no.
What do you mean you know what my answer is?
Absolutely no possible way. I might literally
stop being a Bulls fan if they pick up that option next year. Like, that might be in play, because that would be just the most idiotic move of all time. And I don't care if you're going to bring in a new coach and say, oh, well, maybe he'll pick up on what this new coach is going to be able to do, and maybe this new coach can fix him. No, I want no part of Parker. I want no part of him next year or the future. It's like, great, play out the season, and I hope you go get another contract with another team, but I certainly as hell don't want it to be here in Chicago. Just facts.
No. I mean, no. Flat no. This isn't me being a Jabari hater. It makes no sense to pick up that option. Zero. Because even if the Bulls are impressed with Jabari, and say he does turn things around and continue this upswing we've seen from him recently, where, you know, defense be damned, at least he's a reliable 20 points a night scorer, you're still foolish to think that you have to pick up that $20 million option in order to keep Jabari, because some other team out there is going to offer him that or more. Like, there's a slight chance that the Bulls will say, you know what, we still want to see if Jabari can fit with this core of young players we have, and we value his scoring, and we value him as far as a guy being, you know, doing great things in the community for the youth of Chicago and blah, blah, blah. They can still just try and find a new deal. And a veteran, you know, contract that is nowhere near paying him $20 million. Because let's face it, he's not worth that. The Bulls have their own, you know, the Bulls have a different decision to make about Bobby Portis and what they want to pay a guy who is essentially, when you look at it, going to be a sixth man at best coming off the bench. Because Wendell and Markkanen is the front court of the future here. And Fred Hoiberg, despite everything that Gar tried to sell us when they signed Jabari, decided pretty quickly that Jabari is incapable of playing the wing in this league, and I agree with Fred on that count. So, unless you want to pay a bench player $20 million, and again, this also has a big weighing factor here, is what they want to pay Bobby to stay, if they want Bobby to stay, how much money are you willing to dedicate to do bench players? So, no, picking up the option on Jabari, regardless of how he plays throughout the rest of the season, makes zero sense. I disagree, or I'm with Josh in the fact that I think it's a pretty likely scenario that the Bulls don't land any big names in 2019 free agency. But I'm sorry, as a backup plan, picking up that Jabari option is idiotic.
So real quick, you said something very interesting, and I'm curious if you'd be open for the idea if the Bulls did decline his option, and say 29 other teams said no thanks, we'll pass on that. If you could restructure a deal for 1 year that's at, I don't know, a fraction of what Jabari got last year, this year, $20 million, say you can get him from somewhere between, I don't know, $6 and $8 million, would you do that? 1 year, $6 to $8 million for Jabari to come back, and you still don't know what you're doing with Bobby Portis. Say you don't bring him back, would you bring Jabari Parker back for $6 to $8 million? And even if you do bring Portis back on a multi-year deal, do you bring Parker back if he continues to play and progress a little bit more every month, and by the end of the season we're saying, okay, he's still a terrible defender, but at least he showed that he could score for the majority of the season, would you consider bringing him back?
No.
On a deal that's $6 to $8 million?
No, I'm sorry, no. I have had it
fair
with the front office thinking they can get away with this bullshit where they make a splash signing just to make a splash signing, and most of it is not about the right move for their basketball team and the players on the floor, but about making money for the franchise. It disgusts me to my core. They got away with it with Dwayne Wade, who robbed the organization blind for one meaningless season and laughed his way to the bank and then back to Miami. And they're getting away with it here with Jabari because there's no accountability. None. And I'm sorry, signing Jabari even to not picking up the team option, but a different, lesser deal where they're paying him less money to still be around, would only in some sick way validate their bad decision to sign him here in the first place. It doesn't make sense. You have your front court of the future. You have it. Wendell and Markkanen, back-to-back lottery picks that both look like they're going to be studs in this league. You don't need Jabari. He doesn't fit. I hate this thing with Paxson saying, well, it's not about a right fit right now. It's about, you know, accumulating young talent to this team. We're in a talent accumulation mode. Guess what? Jabari, after two ACL tears, not all that great of a talent. And you overpaid him because he's a big name to put butts in seats and sell jerseys, and it sickens me. No. No.
They don't pay players to play defense.
So Jabari's going to have to find another place to play come next summer. You know, and I think that goes along with what you said and what I said. I think it goes along with a majority of what the Bulls fans feel like. And I think we've gotten enough taste, and I think maybe that becomes more evident once the guys are everybody's healthy and you see kind of what Jabari's role is going forward in the last, I don't know, 45, 50 games or so. So, yeah, I think both of us are clearly and fully out on that. I've got another guy, though, that the Bulls are probably going to sign to bring in that Chicago flair, and that'll be Patrick Beverley. Sign and stamp it right now. If they don't bring Parker back, they're going to bring in another Chicago connection. It's probably going to be Patrick Beverley. So stamp that right now for me.
Or, you know, or another ex-Phoenix Sun. You see the Suns wave to Isaiah Cannon the other day? Hey.
No, thank you. I was done with the Cannon project 3 years ago when he was there, and he had to fill in the playoffs. And yeah, he had a nice this little stretch of a couple minutes there, but I'm done. No, thank you. And I feel bad for him, too. I will say that. I feel bad for him for the injury that he had last year, which was just gruesome. And the ability to just come back and be able to play in the league again is a testament to his game. So good for him, but no thanks to here in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Let's get to a couple more before we get out of here. If the Bulls get into a top five pick and you couldn't choose any of the Duke prospect, who intrigues you for this Bulls team? This is from the 6-3.
That's a good question. I feel like it's one that has been circulating a lot recently because it seems like the Duke guys of Zion, Barrett, and Reddish are consensus top three right now, and the Bulls might not be top three, but they certainly, the way it looks right now, could be headed towards the top five. Maybe they need a little luck to do so. Nasir Little is certainly a guy on my list of non-Duke prospects who I think would be a great fit for this Bulls team, who I've really enjoyed watching so far this college season. So he, outside of the Duke guys, he's certainly the one I'm paying most attention to. Jordan, I feel like your answer might be your boy Romeo Langford.
Yeah, I like Romeo Langford a lot. I think, you know, it's 6'6", 200 pounds. Like, he's a guy that you can switch between the two and the three. But he's very young, and he's going to need somebody to come in and help him. You know, there's some stuff that I see from his game just in college that I think going into the NBA, I'm like, damn, that kid's going to get torched early on. So there would be some growing process with Romeo Langford, but he is a good shooter. Good three-point shooter. He hasn't shown it really in college yet, but I think as we get into Big Ten play, you'll see that a little bit more. Man, can the kid get to the bucket? Like, he shows flashes of kind of what we see from LaVine, not necessarily the dunking, but more so the acrobatic moves around the rim, and that's enough for me to say, hey, I'm intrigued at least. Another guy, too, that I think is rising up people's boards and might be one of those players we don't really talk about until conference play comes and even until March. And it's somebody that Ricky brought up, and it was Kevin Porter. Jr. Out of USC. He's supposed to be that next Trae Young type of talent, guy that can just literally shoot from anywhere. So keep your eyes on him, too. So between those two guys, and obviously the Bulls don't need a big this year. That's very obvious. So Bull Bull's out.
No, they need a point guard or they need a wing. Like, those are clearly the two positions of need on this team right now, if you believe that LaVine, Markkanen, and Wendell are anchored into this future at their positions. You need a point guard, you need a wing. We'll see what Dunn does when he comes back from this injury. But, I mean, especially because we thought that the Bulls might be looking at a wing in this previous draft with, you know, both of the Bridges, and, you know, there were plenty of wing prospects there. They decided to go with a big. That's fine. But now you have to address this wing spot, especially with, you know, it looks like Denzel Valentine is just going to be, a constantly, injury plagued guy whose Bulls tenure might not be long lived. We're not sure quite what we have yet with Chandler Hutchison. Kevin Porter, and for the same reason who I mentioned, Nasir Little of UNC, two wings that the Bulls should absolutely be scouting heavily coming into that 19 draft class.
The last thing I will say on this is and maybe it's a question for you, Matt, if the Bulls fall out of the top five, let's just play fantasy for a second. If the Bulls fall out of the top five, maybe they're at 6, 7, 8, whatever the case may be, could there be talks about the Bulls trading that pick? And maybe a star comes available, and maybe that's something that you can start to think about and package. Would that be a move that you would be behind if it means going out and getting a star? Would you be all right with that? Considering you won't get any of the Duke players and you got to take a chance on somebody outside of the top five, and you're probably not getting Nasir Little, and you're probably not getting Romeo Langford either. So that means you've got to take the pick of your tier three players. Would you take that first round pick and maybe try to move it and try to get a star?
Who's giving up a star to get a second tier draft pick?
That's the question. Who's
dumb enough to do that? No, we all know that this draft class is a lot shorter with a bigger drop-off than the class of 2018. So if the Bulls find themselves outside of the top five and say they're somewhere between 5 and 12 or 5 and 15, nobody's trading the Bulls a current NBA star to move up into that tier of picks. There's no way in hell that's happening.
Just thought I'd throw that question out there. Yeah, and I don't see it either. And like, the only team that I could think about if they're going to completely deconstruct would be the Wizards. But at that point, they're not going to trade Beal for that.
They're not trading Beal or Wall for anything less than a top three pick.
Yeah, and I don't want Wall with that ridiculous contract. But I think that would be the only guy that you could probably convince them. Like, hey, we got to pay this dude like $40+ million in the backside of his contract. Like, you're not getting a top three pick for Wall. So that would be the only move that I can see right this second. Maybe that's something that they flirt with, but I agree with you too. I just don't see any stars available at this moment that would make sense. So maybe that's something to just keep in the back of our minds, kind of file that one away. Well, that's gonna about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us voicemails, text messages after this Pistons game or tomorrow night's game against the Rockets. We'd love to hear from you. That's 331-979-1369. Again, drop us text, drop us voicemails. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy a double dose of Bulls basketball tonight and tomorrow night. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
You guys are killing me, man. It's Hayes and Philly. I do not understand why you guys just don't shut up about trading the Holiday kid, man. Nobody cares. He's not a good player. Nobody in the NBA wants him. Why would anybody trade for him? He's fucking terrible. Stop talking about it. Nobody cares. Nobody wants him.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.